we're now going to talk to Jennifer. We've talked to Jennifer before, and she's at a member of Red Cross. So, first of all, welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks very much, Alan.
How are you today?
On this cold day. Cold, but well.
That's the main thing. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you specifically is there's been a number of stories I've read where the blood supply has been getting very low. And I believe there is the opportunity, and we'll talk about it now, and then again at about 5 to 3, Jennifer will tell you where you can go and what you can do about it. Because, you know, it's not only a case of operations, there's all sorts of things. They can plan operations a bit. Accidents happen overnight. People have to have emergency surgery, so they need to have the blood there. So, first of all, I believe that we are short on blood, and also I believe there's an answer to it right down here in Lilydale.
There is, Alan. Thanks very much, and thanks for the opportunity to talk with you and the listeners about Life Blood today.
Yep.
Every 3 months, the pop-up unit does come to Lilydale.
Every
3 months?
Oh, yep. I thought it was only once a year.
Not regular as clockwork every 12 weeks. Yeah. To the Lilydale Baptist Church, which is on the corner of Hull Road and Swansea Road. And it's open Monday to Friday in the 2 weeks that it's there. And so they set up this week and they'll be there till the end of next week. Not there on the weekends because it's a church and the church needs to use their church on the weekends.
They want to use their church, yes.
That's right. But it's a pretty amazing service that is provided down there, the complete collection of blood. You walk in, are welcomed, have a little bit of screening, have your blood pressure and your hemoglobin checked, and then blood taken, and then, of course, have a snack afterwards.
So it's almost a health check at the same time.
It is. And, in fact, interestingly, we also have just recently added ferritin into the numbers that are reported back.
What?
And that's a measure of the iron that's stored in your body. And so after you've had a blood donation, you get information about your blood pressure, about your hemoglobin and your iron stores. So it can often be a little prompt. In fact, just for my brother, just 2 weeks ago, he got told, go see your doctor because his ferritin levels were low.
So, gee, that's handy. Yeah. I didn't realise that they told you that. So down, what sort of hours, and we'll repeat this again, just coming to 3 o'clock, what sort of hours are they
having
in Lilydale?
So today they're there till 8 o'clock. Thursday, 8 till 3.30, Friday, 8 till 3. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, 12 noon till 8 p.m.
Well, so the workers can get down there at night too,
absolutely,
can't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Thursday and Friday, they're finishing up at 3.30, starting at 8 in the morning.
But I believe there's also a year-round place down in Ringwood where people can donate.
There is, a permanent centre. 365 days of the year it's open. Generally from, Monday to Friday, 7 till 8.
7 a.m. That's 7, only an hour. But
7 a.m. 7 a.m. till 8 p.m. Yeah. Good pickup. I was just checking that you were listening.
I'm listening.
On Saturday, 7 a.m. till 5 p.m. and Sunday, 7 a.m. till 4 p.m. And that's a permanent centre.
So where is that place?
That is at 38 Charter Street in Ringwood.
I didn't know that was there all year round.
Yeah, it is. And you can walk in, but you can also go online, www.lifeblood.com.au. Yeah. So, or just in your preferred search engine, enter Lifeblood and you'll get the website. And you can go online there and book an appointment and also go through the eligibility questions so that you don't waste your time if for some reason you aren't eligible to donate blood right now.
And I believe they have changed, like they have made it easier, haven't they? From what I read, they've increased the amount of people that can now give
blood. There are a number of things. I mean, until recently, for example, the people who lived in the UK in the middle 80s when there was some mad cow disease around, people have lived long enough now for us to know that that's not no longer a problem. And so, for example, that group of people can now give blood.
Right.
You used to have to wait for 3 or 4 months after a tattoo, now it's a week. And there's a lot of people who get a lot of tattoos, but they no longer have an excuse not to give blood. So they're just a couple of examples of things that have changed.
And if a person sits there while they drag a needle through their skin, they shouldn't be frightened of coming down and giving blood, should they?
That's a very good point.
I'm just going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. I've been waiting on the corner, hanging with the streetlights, wiping off the deep fried chicken from my face, and the stop signs are there to warn you, but the voice in my head says walk instead, 'cause who's got time to wait? Now, Jennifer, I thought blood was blood, and when you went along, they just took some blood out, gave you a bicky and sent you home, apart from the fact you've told us now that you get a health check. But there's more than just blood. There's other sort of things you can donate as part of blood. And if I'm not sure about it, we should tell the audience what it's about.
We'll give it a go.
Yep.
Blood is made up of a number of components.
Blood and
red blood cells
and white blood
and white blood. Yes, but we're not really interested in the white blood cells for this purposes. Yep. Red blood cells, plasma, and platelets. When you go and give blood, whole blood, yep, at, for example, the Lilydale pop up,
yep,
Lifeblood will then take that and deliver it to CSL, who will then either process it so that it can be transfused as whole blood into a patient,
right,
or they will extract out the red blood cells, the plasma, and the platelets and put them into
platelets?
Platelets, plasma, and red blood cells.
What actually is platelets, do you know?
What is platelet? What, yep, are platelets, plural?
Me.
I do have my cheat sheet in front of me to make sure I get it right, but platelets are tiny fragments of cells that are made in your bone marrow. There are about 250 million of them in every milliliter of blood, so they are tiny as.
Yeah.
They only last 7 days.
Oh.
So if there are diseases that which people have that need treatment with plasma, we need to get a lot of plasma donations on a regular basis,
right,
because it only lasts 7 days. They're the cells that clumped together to stop bleeding and help form a scab.
Oh, right.
So they're used for people with leukemia or chemotherapy. If someone's platelet levels drop down in their body, then they need to have a transfusion to bring them up so that when they're injured, they won't have a severe bleeding occasion.
So can I just ask you, and maybe this is out of your expertise because it might be a medical question, when a person goes on blood thinners because they've had a problem, does that alter those, what you're talking about now, or does that just thin everything out?
I'm going to guess that it thins everything out. I don't really, right. I can't, well, I don't really know that. We better not.
Because I don't know either. No. No, I just wondered. Yep.
No. So we can extract the platelets and the plasma and the red blood cells from a whole blood donation.
Yeah.
But you can also go down to the Ringwood Centre and you can donate either blood or plasma or platelets.
So how do they take, do they still take the three things out or can they take just separate ones out?
No, they take the three things out as whole blood, and whilst you're there sitting in your chair, the blood is run through a machine,
right,
and the platelets and or the plasma are taken out and the red blood cells are put back into your body.
Well, right, so hang on, let's get, I didn't know this. So they take the whole thing out.
Yes.
They extract whatever they want. It could be the two, the plasma and the other, or it might only be one?
Yes.
And so, and then they put the rest, or they put the blood.
They put the red blood cells back into your body.
Didn't know that.
It's a process called apheresis, and it's just like a circular pump.
Yeah.
With this special little, very clever machine, obviously, that separates out the blood products. And because you're having your red blood cells put back into your body, you can donate plasma or platelets more often than you can donate whole blood.
So
you can go every 2 weeks down to Ringwood to donate platelets.
Because that third thing that you're talking about, the platelets, that's being replenished every 7 days, you said, didn't you?
Correct. Well, they last 7 days outside the body. They're being replenished all the time in the body.
In the body's
and within 2 weeks, you've got back to normal and ready to lower the numbers artificially.
Oh, right. Didn't know that. It's marvellous what they can do.
It's very clever.
So let me just ask you, a couple of questions came out of that, and we did mention about blood pressure tablets. Are people on blood pressure tablets and blood thinners, are they still able to donate blood?
So blood pressure tablets and blood thinners are two completely different things.
I meant there's two questions.
Yeah, so blood thinners, no. Blood pressure tablets, generally, yes. It will depend a little bit on what other, especially cardiac issues that you might have. But but yes, I'm on blood pressure tablets, for example, but I can still give blood.
Oh, so blood pressure, you can.
Blood pressure is fine. Controlled blood pressure is fine.
But not blood thinners.
Correct.
No, well, that's right, because I know there'll be a few people listening that are on blood thinners. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Boss, I'm shooting through. I'm sick and tired working for a fool. I've got somewhere I've got to be. I've got a girl waiting home for me. I'm hitting the road, I'm on my way. I gotta believe in here today. Have you heard the news? From Adelaide to Timbuktu, no one can fix to you, my Mary Lou. One of the things that I like best is the way you sway in that summer dress.
You know it really is so sweet, the way you dance around in your bare feet. We're just as happy as we can be, like two little buds of the apple tree. There's something I know we can do.
Now, Jennifer, at the start of this, I asked about a health check. You brought it up because I didn't realise you got such a great health check. So do you ever get to the stage where people come in and want to donate blood and the health check says, now, hang on, you'd better go to your doctor because we think you've got this or that or something else is wrong?
Absolutely. People are encouraged to not give blood or not allowed to give blood.
Yep.
I'm sure that would happen every day at every donor centre. For example, someone's haemoglobin might be low or their blood pressure really high, and they don't know that because both of those are really symptomless diseases.
Yeah, particularly blood pressure, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so if any of those things are picked up on the spot, then Lifeblood would not take that person's blood because their first priority is to the donor. They want you to be the healthiest person you can possibly be.
And want you to come back.
That's right. They do want you to come back and back and back.
Yep.
If you've had a cold, for instance, they want you to be well for about a week before you go in and get blood. If you've had cancer, it's generally 5 years. They don't want to put any stress, any extra stress on your body just for the sake of helping somebody else.
And I suppose also, you don't, pardon me, with likes of cancer, you don't want to take anything out of a person's body and put it into another's body that's not pure, do you?
No.
Yeah.
When the blood is taken to CSL and the various laboratories around the place, it would be tested for anything and the risk of any adverse product being passed from one person to another is really incredibly small in Australia.
Is it? They keep it that one. now, you're going to say that Michael Klim is one of your ambassadors, or is he ambassador for Lifeblood?
He is a Lifeblood ambassador. Michael Klim was an Olympic swimmer.
Very fit.
Very fit, won very many medals. And in 2022, he on television announced that he has an autoimmune disorder and he needs to have frequent infusions of plasma in order to treat that. We spoke about blood and we spoke about platelets, but plasma is the yellow part of the blood. When it's extracted out of the blood, it's a yellow, pretty ugly looking fluid.
<Is it? laughs> But it does a good job.
It does. Its job is to carry the other blood cells around the body. So I was reading on the website about an analogy where the plasma is like the highways and the roads that carry the delivery drivers, which are the red blood cells.
Yep.
And the platelets are a bit like the emergency responders running there to cause a scab to solve something. So, but the plasma carries all the bits of the blood
and you
around
said that
the body.
Those platelets are generated in the spine, did you say?
In the bone marrow, yes.
So What happens when a person has a bone marrow transplant? Do you know? Or are we getting miles out of both of our expertise here?
We are getting... it is the land of the fanciful probably for both of us, but, the fluid part of the bone marrow is extracted and then replaced.
Yep.
And hopefully with 100% healthy cells that then take over the body and would create new platelets along with all the other cells that the bone marrow...
It's just that I had a friend of mine, unfortunately passed away, but that's not to say it was a problem of anything like this, but he had to have a bone marrow transplant. And I know that every injection he'd ever had as a baby right through had to all be replaced because everything went out, like his measles, chicken pox. Huh. Every injection he'd ever had right back to when he was a baby because it just cleared them all out.
It was as if he was a completely new person.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it didn't work, but that had nothing to do with the blood. It was just a disease he had, and I miss him very much, Greg. But it's another Greg. It's not our Greg here. All right, so we're talking about Michael Klim, and I got a bit off the track. So he has to have transfusions all the time, you say?
He does. He has frequent transfusions, and so he's autoimmune. So his immune system is fighting itself.
Corrupted sort of thing, yep.
Yes, and so he has to have parts of the immune response, the bit which is the process that fights any foreign bodies, any infections, yep. any things like cancer. He has to have the parts of that are not working properly replaced, and that happens through plasma transfusions for him.
Right, so how often does he have to have them?
I don't know.
Ah, right. Well, let's fix that.
But frequently.
All right. What else would you like to talk about? I've lost the train of thought after that.
Well, I'll throw you a curveball here, yeah. Alan.
Don't ask me a question.
No. Last time we were here, also talking about the other donation services that Lifeblood runs, and one of them is for breast milk.
Oh, yeah, we did too.
We did, and neither of us knew very much about it, so I've gone away and done some studying.
Yeah.
And most often that breast milk is used for premature babies whose mums are not able to provide sufficient breast milk for them.
Yeah.
And the way that it works is that somebody who wishes to donate breast milk rings Lifeblood and has a discussion with one of the fantastic call centre people, and if approved, then gets registered into the system.
So it's not... hang on, I just want to go back one track here because I'm getting a bit lost here. With the breast milk, it's not necessarily the mother of that baby that's donating the milk. It could be somebody else.
Absolutely, because, the mother might have died. The mother might just not be able to make milk, may not be able to make enough milk, may have some other sort of problem that is preventing the baby from getting enough milk. And
now,
so...
Sorry, I don't want to... No, you can't...
So it can be a complete stranger who provides the breast milk.
Right. Now, I'm embarrassed asking this, but I'm going to ask you as a lady, and it's not for any silly reason. I've really got a reason behind it. So how does another lady create breast milk? Because I thought it was only if she'd had the baby.
So it will be someone who is currently feeding another child but has excess milk.
So they're not...
So it'll be somebody who has recently had a child and is feeding, but, that child doesn't need all the milk that she produces. So she can express a little extra.
I thought she only created enough for her baby, but that's not right.
I think there's probably as many variations on how much breast milk is produced as there are women in the world who are breastfeeding. Right. So some women will have more than enough and some won't have enough.
I better give that away because I'm getting into an area but I was quite curious as to how that happened because, as I say, I just thought the woman just created
and
enough.
You could imagine, for example, when the child is weaning, the mother might want to encourage the child not to have as much breast milk and be providing other options, but she's still got milk. And so if she then becomes a registered breast milk donor, she will receive some special sterile plastic bags.
Yep.
And after the milk has been expressed, it goes into one of those special bags frozen, and then when there's 3 litres in the freezer, she rings the appropriate number and somebody comes to collect it.
Well, because one of the things, and again, I'm getting into a territory where I don't really want to be, but I think it's important, the breast milk isn't just a case of because it's handy and it's always warm and all this sort of stuff, and I don't want to go any further with that, but it's the antibodies and all that that's in the breast milk, isn't it, that the baby really needs, rather than it's not just a case of, oh, it's a convenient way to feed the baby.
No, it's certainly not it's certainly not for convenience in these cases. These are premature babies who need
I meant with a normal lady, like when I say normal, a lady who's just had a baby, it's not so much that it's a nice way to carry the milk around and keep it at the proper temperature. It's more the antibodies and all that goes in.
We assume that humans have developed for a good reason, and that is a very good way to provide nutrition and, as you say, all the antibodies and any defence mechanisms that might be inherent in humans.
If a mother can't do it, and that's why these donations are, or I'm asking you, then that child, if they went straight on to milk, A, they might be able to cope with it, but B, if they did, they're not going to get the things they should be getting.
That's right. They certainly wouldn't go straight on to cow's milk. Usually they'd go on to a formula, but there are babies for whom it is decided that breast milk is really the best if they can possibly get it.
Yeah. All right. I'll get off that now because I'm I guess with that, though, the donor, and we'll get off the technical side of it now, the donor in that is not going to be a lifetime donor like blood, are they?
No.
It's only going to be a very short time until...
Yes. Yes, until the milk dries up.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I'm going to take a break because I want to change this subject.
I love sleeping in on Saturdays, and I love college football games. I love not acting my age and good barbecue. Yeah, I'm a fan of Faulkner books and anything my mama cooks. Smallmouth bass have got me hooked on Sunday afternoons. Yes, I love on my fries. I love a good loud honky tonk. It rocks on Friday nights. And hell yes, I love my truck.
Just a quick reminder, I'll be back on Sunday night between 6 and 8 with a rock and roll hit parade. Plenty of hits from the 60s and probably a bit of the 70s and a whole lot of great fun. And, of course, I'll be back next Wednesday between 12 and 3. I know we've got Crime Stoppers and Mr. Excited, but we've got 3 hours of great interviews next week, so I'd love to have you along too. But we're talking to Jennifer from Red Cross. Now, we've talked a lot about blood for about 3/4 of an hour, and we've learned a lot. But there are volunteers needed also for other things other than collecting blood. Well, collecting blood can't be done by volunteers. You need a profession. But there are volunteer opportunities for people, aren't there?
There are. We do have volunteers who serve cups of tea at Lifeblood.
Yep.
But
and they probably get to eat a bickie.
They do. They do. There are lots of really good snacks.
Tim Tams.
Tim Tams and cheese and little chips and lots of, not speaking from experience, of course. But yes, there are about 10,000 Red Cross volunteers across 10,000? The country. Yes, about 2,500 in Victoria.
Yep.
And they participate in probably close to 20 different programs across the country. The one that's most obvious to people is emergency services. You see them, you know, in the floods and fires yep. and disasters with the red T-shirts on, and they're supporting people with what we call psychological first aid, comforting people, helping them find the right service to help them with whatever their need is at that time, and managing the Register, Find, Reunite program on behalf of the, in Victoria, on behalf of the Victoria Police.
Right.
So that's an amazing part of being a Red Cross volunteer. Sure. But there are programs that would suit anybody, and one of the ones that's really quite interesting is the Heritage Program.
Yeah.
We turned 110 last year. I think I was in talking with you around the time of yep. our birthday. And the Heritage team have been scanning documents that have surfaced over the past 110 years. They might get uniforms. We used to, Red Cross volunteers used to have uniforms during the war. Somebody might find a suitcase in the cupboard that has a fundraising in the 1950s brochure. Oh, right. Or
where grandma and grandpa pass away and they find it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so often when I'm going around the state visiting volunteers in the different parts of Victoria, I'll come back with a car boot full of archive material. Yep, them and trauma teddies. And it's a really, and so that then gets given to the team in at the archives, which is a combination of paid staff and volunteers.
Yep.
And so for anybody who's interested in family history or history generally or yep. or English and writing, it's a great project to be involved yes. with. I did get some materials from our Portsea group a couple of years ago and dumped that on the table of the Heritage team over to you. And they actually had a trainee, a student in with them for that week, and she went through all of that material and found enough information about five women who had been members for over 50 years that she was able to write what they did at the end of the Second World War.
Terrific.
And what they did over yeah. the next 20 years, how they turned it into fundraising, what they did for the local Frankston Hospital. And none of us knew that all of that information was in those boxes, but the staff went through things and turned the photocopied pages into something that had real meaning.
That's terrific.
So, yeah, it's a fantastic.
And you've also got these family links, which you do a lot of work on too,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, restoring family links. Yep. So we like to help put people together if they've been separated because of war or disaster.
Yep.
It's not after a divorce or a family breakdown or something like that, but yep. if people have become refugees and following through the system for, you know, 15, 20 years before they come to Australia, and then they've lost contact with everybody back in their original country. And through our networks, we might have Red Cross teams working in that area. The message will be spread. the volunteers also basically use things like Ancestry.com and Trove newspapers, all the different newspaper sites around the world, because you might be able to find an electoral roll, depending on whether the country had things. Any sleuthing that you might do when you're looking at your own family history is the sort of thing that the volunteers will assist with. Writing letters to consulates, writing letters to the local post office in Timbuktu or wherever it is. And I think last year we put together about 250 people.
Yeah, I think you've been very successful, Red Cross, at that, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. And it's something that's happened since the very first time when Red Cross started back in 1859, when Henri Dunant came across the battlefield. A dying Frenchman asked Henry to take a message back to his mother in France. And so we like to say that was the beginning of the Restoring Family Links program.
That's terrific. Now, aged care. You've got a system coming up for that. Yep.
Aged care, yes. Yep. We have agreement from the various authorities that Red Cross volunteers can visit any aged care facility across Australia to provide friendship, company,
because some people in aged care never ever get a visitor. Some families put them in and just leave them.
They do, and some people don't have families.
No.
Older, and a lot of people don't have friends. They might be the oldest of their friends are already
all pushed off.
Their friends are pushing up daisies, or they might have moved to a different part of the state so that they're closer to their relatives. And it's horses for courses. We had a call out in Camberwell. There were some Greek patients or residents in an aged care facility, and they were losing their English. And so there was a call out through our members section for anyone who spoke Greek who was able to go and visit these people. And so we were able to connect in with a couple of people.
Terrific. We'll just take one more quick break and then have your paper and pencil ready, and Jennifer will remind you again where you can go and give blood.
Let's get it on. Yeah, y'all can come along. Everybody drinks on me, bought out the bar just to feel like I'm a star. Now I'm thanking the Academy. Missed my ride home, lost my iPhone. I wouldn't have it any other way. If you're with me, let me hear you say. It's on, yeah, party on the lawn. Whistle as the girls walk by. If the cops roll up, pour the cops a cup, cause everybody's here tonight. Call a taxi, pack the backseat. I wouldn't have it any other way. If you're with me, let me hear you say. Y'all can come along, everybody drinks on me. I can never.
Jennifer, now, we started off by telling, we did a lot of talk about blood and blood donations, because without blood, none of us are here. Now, could you just give us a reminder where they are and when they're available, and also promote the Ringwood one? I didn't know that was there.
Sure. So the pop-up at Lilydale comes every 3 months, and it's at the Lilydale Baptist Church on the corner of Hull Road and Swansea Road in Lilydale. That's Monday to Friday. So today it's there till 8 p.m. Tomorrow, 8 a.m. till 3:30. Friday, 8 till 3. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, noon until 8 p.m. Thursday, 8 till 3:30, and Friday, 8 till 3. But if Lilydale doesn't suit, just 15 minutes further down the highway, and we've got the permanent Ringwood Centre, which is at 38 Charter Street in Ringwood, and that's open 365 days a year. Monday to No excuses. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. till 8 p.m. and Saturday, 7 a.m. till 5 p.m. Sunday, 7 a.m. till 4 p.m.
So there's plenty of opportunities to go down there.
And if you go to Ringwood, you don't only get your biscuits and your little chips and things, but they have sausage rolls and party pies and milkshakes as well.
Fair dinkum.
Yep.
Gee whiz, it's almost worthwhile going down just for that.
Free
alone.
Feed, absolutely. Fill your pockets with all the snacks.
That sounds terrific. All right, so down for the next 2 weeks to the Lilydale Baptist Church, corner of Hull and Swansea Road, or Ringwood at 38 Charter Street, Ringwood, 365 days of the year. And you get a good meal there. You get
a good snack. Absolutely. And if Alan, if we just get one person giving blood in these next 2 weeks, then you and I have done a great community service.
Sounds good, but I'd like to think we could get more. Now, I said to you when I first started that the numbers were way down on the blood. Now, I think you've got a bit of good news, but don't people think that they can slack off, because it's being used all day, every day, isn't it?
It is. It's fascinating. When I was preparing for today, I had a look on the Red Cross website, and which was Sunday morning, and we were urgently in need of both O positive and O negative blood. And that's the most common type of blood.
Yep.
It was nearly down to zero levels.
True.
And one of the reasons that it sometimes gets really low is when there's disasters, like all of the floods that we've been having up north, people up north,
they can't get to the
donation centres, and the donation centres are not open because of the floods. And so then the rest of the country needs to step up and contribute just a little bit more.
Never thought of that.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty tricky.
Yeah.
And it is interesting how it changes, because I looked just before we came today, and we're now about 50% levels for both O positive and O negative. So in a couple of days it's improved. But
all right, so, and we still need more. Do you find that during winter, when people get sick and that the numbers go down, that, you know, with people having flu and that, or is it just so fairly
general? That's completely logical, but I don't actually know the answer.
Right.
I'll find out before my next visit to you.
If you could, please. Because, let's be honest, people do get the flu.
Yeah, and if you've had the flu, you need to, or a cold, you need to have been well for a week before you go in to give blood.
Sounds
and good. I did forget to say the age ranges too. If you're a first-time donor, you need to be between 18 and 75 years of age.
Right.
And then you can keep, giving forever. So long as you don't have a break, you can keep giving as long as you're healthy.
As long as you're healthy. This may be out of both of our expertise again, but if you've had an injection for, say, the flu, shingles, and any of those, is there a stipulation that you have to wait a couple of weeks before you can give blood?
I don't believe so.
Right. I don't know either.
I don't believe so. I didn't see that when I was checking through the eligibility quiz over the weekend. I didn't see that, so I don't believe so.
Also, before you give blood, do you need to sort of eat anything special before you give the blood?
You need to have had a good meal beforehand, so a sandwich and a piece of fruit if it's lunchtime, and to have drunk at least 8 glasses of water in the on the morning, the 3 or 4 hours before you
give blood. That's not hard going, is it?
No. And that just increases your blood volume so that it all moves more quickly. It doesn't,
doesn't drag along.
It's not sticking in your arteries.
Jennifer, look, I've just about out of time. The news are knocking on the door. Can you just give us a website for people who might be interested in these volunteering positions? In the head office and all that,
That's a really easy one. redcross.org.au.
Can't do easier than that, can you?
Absolutely not.
It's redcross.org.au. Yep. Because there's no doubt other opportunities. I've got to go. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again during the year.
Look forward to it. Thanks,
Alan. Thanks, Jennifer. Bye.